Hey everyone, welcome to another fantastic Friday. I have a few announcements before we head into our interview with author Beth White. First of all, authors, we are in our last week before our mini conference kicks off on May 7th with Crystal Cottle's session on how to plot an attention-grabbing magnet reader. Then it will be followed by my session on how to use Canva as an author on May 9th. And ending with Misty Embeller's session on May 11th on how to build an email list full of avid readers. The trainer follows each session with a one-hour work session where you can ask questions and get feedback on your own writing project. These sessions have a limited number of slots, and currently we have 7 seats left for each of these work sessions. The training sessions are $17 and the work sessions are $47. Your $17 ticket will grant you access to the recording for 3 months after the training. So even if you cannot join us live, you can access the valuable training information on your own time. You can learn more and register at literaryscape.com/events. And I'm very excited to announce that our next coffee and books event will be on June 8th from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us for a live Q&A with authors Julie Lessman, Lynn Shannon, and Misty Embeller. These events are always fun as we connect, share stories, and ask questions. I hope to see you on June 8th. Subscribers to our newsletter can click on the link included in this week's newsletter, or you can visit literaryscape.com/events to register today. All right, let's dive into this fun and intriguing interview with Beth White. Welcome to the Literary Escape podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. All right, welcome, Beth. We're so excited to have you here with us today to talk about your Daughtry House series. And we loved it. We've started talking about it already this morning. But I would love to know, where did you get your inspiration for this series?
Well, several different sources. That's kind of how this thing works. It's not a very clean process. Think how to make a short story out of this. I'm a Mississippi girl. Grew up, fell in love, went to college, the whole thing in Mississippi. And then after my husband and I married, we wound up in Alabama. So South Alabama. So my first few books were set in mostly in Alabama, go along the Gulf Coast, which is where I live now. And then I got to a point with my most recent publisher where I was ready to pitch a new series. I had finished up the Gulf Coast Chronicles, which was set obviously on the Gulf Coast. The next series idea I pitched was a continuation of that series. And for whatever reason, they decided they didn't want to do that. So some of this is creative, launched by me, and some of it's sort of publisher generated, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So my acquiring editor suggested setting a story in the post-Civil War era, since I'm very Southern and I've been reading a lot of history, and I had been writing historical novels. That sounded intriguing to me. I didn't know much about the Reconstruction period. So I went and dug around and researched a little bit, kind of read a little bit, just kind of general history. And what I found was pretty surprising. And so and I was at a point where I felt like I had kind of covered most of the Gulf Coast Alabama stuff I was interested in. So I thought, why don't I go back to my Mississippi roots and see if I can kind of pull together a story that would be set during the Reconstruction period that might deal with some ideas that I was interested in. At the time I was teaching music. I'm a music choir teacher, and I was teaching music in an inner city black school here in Mobile. And I was just fascinated by all the familial relationships. And I was really interested in racial cultural interactions and cultural developments and how we got where we are. And so I thought, okay, what if I really dig into how this happened, not just in the Civil War, which has been covered ad nauseum, obviously, but in that this kind of little known period in between Civil War and civil rights, and see how all of that kind of developed. And I was aware that it was going to be, could be controversial. And I was aware that it could be really emotionally messy. And I was aware that I might find out some things that I really didn't want to find out. So, but we go where angels fear to tread, right? So I just dug in, and I developed this idea of three sisters, because I needed a series idea. So I'm one of four sisters. I'm the oldest of four sisters. So I understand that dynamic pretty well, obviously. So I developed my three sisters with very different personalities, very different goals and motivations, very different ideas on what love and marriage would be like, very, even different, extremely different perspectives on what their history is, on what their family history is, because not everybody sees everything. And so, you know, the younger sister's too young to really know even all of what's going on. And the older sister is aware of most everything she thinks, but then there are things that are hidden that you may never know until somebody passes away and, you know, and ancient history is dug up. So all of that stuff is really fascinating to me. So I thought, what if my sisters are these genteel Southern belles, and they've grown up wealthy, and they've had they at least in their childhood was protected and sheltered, and then the Civil War, which is, you know, the world turns upside down, and everything that they own is just all but stripped away. Parents are gone, and they have to survive. And so, and that's what you do as a novelist. You put your characters in the worst possible scenario that you can put them in and just let them dig themselves out.
Yeah.
You know, and as a Christian author, all of that is overlaid and wrapped in what God does in our lives, and how he redeems us and shapes us and has mercy and grace for us. This is kind of a long explanation, but this is literally how that happened. It was my editor's suggestion that we do Reconstruction. And I took a deep breath and said, okay. And then I just ran with it and researched developed characters who would have the most to lose in whatever situation I had to put them in. Okay. Does that answer the question somewhat?
Yeah, that's wonderful. I love it. And you're right. There's not a lot written in the Reconstruction period. It's just kind of like, we had a war, it's done, and we moved on. But in reality, we didn't just get to move on. Those people had to rebuild and come into a new way of living. So
yeah.
Which I think you did a lot of justice to that, explaining it, showing the struggles that they would have faced, the different characters too in it. So I thought you did a really good job with it.
Thanks.
We enjoyed it.
So were there any characters or events in the books that were based on real events or people?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Who was the not Stonewall Jackson, one of those Confederate big wigs, one of the big generals, was very active in, I can't believe I've lost his name, but it's been so long since I wrote this. He actually lived in Mississippi. You may think of it before I do. He lived in Mississippi. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Lived in Mississippi, owned plantations in Memphis and North Mississippi, and was kind of beginning to stir up the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. Was one of the first founding members of the Ku Klux Klan as we know it today. I mean, the Klan was a, this was another thing that I found out things I really didn't want to know, because you know how when you grow up in the South, it's like, oh yeah, we're Southern, but la la la, I don't want to hear the I don't want to hear the ugly stuff.
Yeah,
where are you girls from?
We're in Indiana, so no. Yeah,
yeah, it's one of those things where you're kind of proud of being a Southerner, and it's kind of a, you grow up thinking, oh, I love being in the South, but then there's this deep kind of awareness and shame of, yeah, we were the bad guys in that situation. So that's a little, it's a little hard to nap. And you've got people down here who deny all that and just kind of talk over it and pretend like there was justification for things that happened. And then you've got people who are deeply ashamed and apologize their lives away and can't ever move on. So that didn't answer your question, but yes, there were real characters like that, kind of woven into the story. And as I had my my fictional characters, I had them bounce up against real people. I wove in some of the real legislators. There were real life black representatives, and I think there was a black senator even early on. And that's kind of the interesting thing about Reconstruction period. There was a tiny little window of time where we get past the Civil War and the Union federal forces were kind of inhabiting, kind of built themselves into Southern infrastructure right after the war, and tried to keep a lid on all of this racial tension, tried to make sure that freed slaves were able to move into the community and have jobs and have land and be able to flourish. There was just this real kind of almost a naive, and it was very much religiously based. This was church people mainly who were doing this, because they were compelled by what the Bible says about justice and mercy and compassion to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And then they just got tired. And it just got to be a lot. And it didn't take long. It's maybe a 5 to 10 year window where that was going on. And then the people who lived in places like Indiana and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts, New Hampshire, wherever, just got tired and said, just come home. Let's just end this and let's just whitewash it over. Just let them do their thing down there in the South. And they took their hands off and things went crazy. That's when you get Jim Crow, and that's when you get the Ku Klux Klan and just crazy stuff. So there were real characters. And then I based a lot of my my fictional characters, I tried to base them on people who, real people without giving them a name. And I sort of mishmashed characters together so that would be unrecognizable as real people, so that you don't go around hurting people's, you know, unnecessarily hurting people's feelings and dragging up dirt and all that kind of thing. So yeah. There you go. Yeah. My Pinkerton character was based on real people.
Oh, neat. Yeah. I love that. I loved the Pinkerton agency. Yeah. There. That was an interesting agency that did quite a bit.
I thought that would be fun. This is the Reconstruction period. Like I said, it could be kind of heavy, mm-hmm. and really emotionally intense. So I worked really hard to find some ways to bring lightness and a little more intrigue into it without getting, you know, like this is a terrorist story of some sort.
Yeah. No, I love how you just kind of going back on some of the things you mentioned. We talked about one of the lines, I think it's in the first book, where you talk about it's important to know our history because it impacts our present and our future. And so we just kind of talked about, like, even today we still battle that as far as people wanting to rewrite history or bury it. And what we need the truth, because we talked to you about, you know, when you read the Old Testament, I don't know about you, but I personally get frustrated with the Israelites because I'm like, you just did this like four generations back, you know, and we're just in this cycle. And I said, we are still, as humans, we are still repeating cycles. And if we don't know our history, it could get pretty ugly pretty fast. And then the other piece that you talked about, I appreciate you sharing the view from growing up and living in the South. It's so different for us. You're right, up here that have lived up in the North, about this like buried, some people have this real deep shame, right, of what happened in the South, even though it wasn't them personally, right, that did it. And I thought you really drew that out with Mose and Horatia too, when they talked about we need to let that guilt and shame go, get out from under that yoke. But I can imagine being right there right after the war, the battle that was for everybody too, so fresh.
Yeah, and you're right. We definitely, I mean, clearly over the last few years, that sense of that all of that emotional turmoil has not gone away, and people keep dragging it up and keep dredging it up like we're going to deal with what happened 100 years ago, you know, by something simple. No, it's a matter of truth. Your word, the word you use, truth, has kind of been my go-to word as I wrote that series. But I'm working on another book now. And I'll talk about that later. But truth is our friend. That's our only friend, you know. And the Bible is truthful too. Yeah, I read the Old Testament. I think these people were horrible. They were barbaric, and they were acting in the name of God. And you know, and is God really like that? Well, that's truthful. That's how human beings are. We're horrible. We all are.
We are.
We're all friends.
That's why we need Jesus.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, goodness. Do you have a favorite character then from the series that you really enjoyed writing?
I go back and forth between Joelle and Aurora. Joelle struck me. I laughed every day I wrote her character. The things she said were things that were buried in the back of my head and that I would never say out loud. Because she was such a quirky weirdo, but with this tender heart. And she was so she was so bookish and so awkward and never and always said the wrong thing, and I just deeply sympathized with her, and all that struck me as hilariously funny. So I had a lot of fun you know, pitting her against Skylar and his, you know, life's wonderful attitude.
Oh, yeah.
And then I really enjoyed Aurora too, because she was another one that is, I mean, she is the flip opposite of me. And obviously the flip opposite of Joelle as well, with her bubbly, you know, unicorns and rainbows attitude toward her. And that struck me as hilariously funny also, because I know people like that. And I know, and I watch them, I think, how can you possibly have that cheerful of an attitude? And I just thought she was really funny. So I enjoyed her, and I really enjoyed, usually the last book is where I kind of really get a grip and a handle on the characters and really understand what they're doing. I really kind of understand what the whole thing is up to, because it takes that long. That was a 3-year process of writing that series.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to Zane and Aurora, Zane was pretty much the kind of distilled everything that I was trying to think about with regard to, you know, every person has got his part in some conflict and has got to deal with all of the things that happen to you in a conflict and come out on the other side without bitterness and resentment and unforgiveness. So I really, even though he was a lot, he was much more stoic kind of character, all of his stuff was going on the inside. I didn't enjoy it necessarily. It was not a really fun process of working through his character, because he had a lot of grief and a lot of stuff on the inside, but helping him work through, I guess I'm an armchair psychologist. I enjoyed helping him work through all of his angst and bitterness, and getting him to a point where he could accept love and take love in without, you know, putting up a hand.
Yeah. You did a great job pairing him with Aurora too, with her bubbly and everything's great and wonderful, and his kind of jaded view of things just because of his experiences. So kind of like Joelle and Skylar. Mm-hmm. You're right. They are opposites, but they work so well together.
Isn't that how we fall in love? That's generally how that works.
Yeah, it is. I do remember when I was dating my husband, I thought we are complete opposites, but it totally works.
Yeah, it took me 4 years to fall in love with my husband, because he's never met a stranger. He's so gregarious and charming and funny, and I just thought he was completely unserious. I just could not take him seriously.
Yeah.
For 4 years, until I, you know, had a chance to do a retreat with him. We took a trip together as a Baptist Student Union missionaries, and did a mission trip together, and I saw the serious side of him, and I saw, you know, this guy's deeply committed to Christ.
Yeah.
And you're not gonna find anything better than that. And you can overlook the goofy stuff, mm-hmm. because the real stuff is underneath where it really matters.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. Love it.
So Grandmama is a unique character. What inspired you to write her the way you did?
She is every Southern grandma I have ever known in my life. And I'm becoming that Southern grandma. I'm fully confessing. I can just see it happening. You know, you've been through it all. You have seen people come and you've seen people go, and you know what works. And why are you messing around? Why are you being an idiot? So
I liked her so much. I'm kind of like that. Like,
why are you being so crazy? Stop it. Just stop it right now. But at the same time, she's got, she absolutely loves her family, loves her grandchildren to pieces, and would give her life for them. And so she's obviously a brilliant woman, or I tried to make her a brilliant woman as much as I'm possible, as much as I can. So, neither one of my grandmothers were exactly like her. My grandmother that I remember the most was a very soft, gentle Southern woman who cooked and sewed and made things and brought people in and grew flowers and all of that stuff. But I have known women in my church, several pastors' wives who were the matriarchs of the church, who had that "we are the queen" attitude, and it struck me as being really funny. So yeah. There you go. That's where that came from.
That's interesting. We just talked about, I have to admit, the first time I met her on page and just the way she treated Thomas Ann, I was like, I do not like this woman. I did not like her at first. I thought, that's so mean, poor Thomas Ann. And then as the series went on, I was like, I kind of like her. I just think at first she's just very, that first appearance of her. And I think it's kind of like what you just talked about. It's like, this is, you know, I run this place.
Well, you know, somebody's got to. And Thomas Ann is not going to run the place. So,
yeah.
So what does that mean? That means grandma's in charge.
Yeah.
Thomas Ann was
absolutely. She liked her from the beginning. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
I like how she appeared to be that way, but she would also get on her hands and knees and help them, you know, clean the hotel. Yeah. And like her actions were different than her words, I guess, is where I love
it. Reminds me too. That's another little place where that comes from. I read a lot of Regency romance. I read a lot of Georgette Heyer when I was growing up, and Heyer always had these very stiff upper lip matriarch characters, mm-hmm. who were underneath the cheerleader and the underneath the person who was going to rescue the heroine and keep her from doing something absolutely stupid or really deeply understand the hero or whatever. So that always kind of plays into things. The literature that I read has a lot to do with that. Yeah.
Okay. So you started to share a little bit, but now it's your time to share what mm-hmm. you're working on now that readers can expect from you soon.
I finished up the Daughtry House series in 2019, I guess, was when I finished, what is the name of that book? Reckless Love. That wasn't my title, but whatever. I finished it, and then it released in May of 2020. Do you know what day it released on? Blackout Tuesday. The day when all the black squares came up. This is during COVID.
Oh.
And everybody's online and everybody is posting black squares on the day that it released. So that book did terrible. As far as sales go, it was crushing. To this day, I don't know what God is. I don't know what God was up to with that. And I may not know, but anyway, so what, because that book did not do well, or that's what I'm blaming it on. And my publisher was being really careful about the next series. So we decided to kind of leave the Daughtry House series where it was and move on to something else. So, you know, what do you do? I write what I'm interested in. So I'd always been interested in World War II history, and my husband loves World War II history. So, so I had to do like a crash course in World War II history. I didn't know much about it. And I read and I read and I read. And that takes a year or two at least to just kind of get your arms around. And that's a huge topic, as you know. So to get my to wrap my brain around, okay, this is a different way of speech. Technology is completely different. Technology is a thing. During World War II, people had begun to travel. So there was not this northern, southern, western thing that there, I mean, still some of that, but not as much. Mm-hmm. So I decided to write World War II, and I pitched a series that I thought would be, you know, that I really liked. And my publisher was not quite happy with it. My editor had changed editors at the time, which kind of changes the dynamics of how things go. And what you do is you pitch an idea to the publisher. They take it to a committee, and the committee is made up of marketing people and sales people, mm-hmm. and creative people and word people. And all of those people have to agree that this idea is something that the company can invest thousands and thousands of dollars in. So this is a business thing as well as a creative thing. So they, because of publishing was in a crisis at the time. And I think largely because of that, they were not quite as willing to take a chance, you know, on something that didn't look like, oh, this is a, you know, we're, this is, she's nailed this. We can, this is a slam dunk. We can do this. It wasn't like that. And that, and that's not really what I write anyway. What I write is more niche oriented. So we agreed to part ways, at that point. And I just kind of pulled back and I've thought about, you know, a couple different, I thought about self-publishing. I thought about going to a secular publisher, which might still happen. But anyway, I've been working on the World War II idea has not left me, but it has morphed. And this is how this works. As you take an idea and I had pulled it apart. I had it started with a 3-book series and then I squished it together all into one big giant epic novel. And as I started working on it, I realized that this giant big epic novel is really 3 books anyway. So I split it back up into 3, and this goes over a period of 2 or 3 years. So now I'm back to a 3-book series, but it's a different 3-book series than the one I had originally pitched to Revell. And I think it's much better. And that, you know, that's how things work too. You know, God's the author of inspiration and creativity. And I know that he's taken the circumstances of my life and circumstances of world culture. And as I travel, I've learned things. So I've met people, I've learned things. And so this book is, this series that I'm working on it doesn't really have a title right now because I don't really know enough about it yet. But I do, I think I have 3 solid sets of characters. One of the books will be set mainly in the Gulf Coast area. There were some kind of interesting things, believe it or not, going on that we're in a port city. So they were building ships and they were building Liberty boats and there were U-boats in the bay. And there was quite a bit of that activity going on and training. There's an Air Force base here. I'm writing. And then I found out a little bit about computer coding, which started during World War II. There's an American admiral named Grace Hopper, who was one of the first computer coders. Wow. And she got her start during World War II. And so I'm thinking about using that as one of the, you know, kind of the thriller suspense plot points of mm-hmm. one of the novels. And then one of the books will actually go into the South Pacific. One of my characters is a Navy flight nurse. Mm-hmm. And then I've got, I'm interested in the Japanese code breakers. They were like a Japanese American citizens who were called in to train people who read documents that were retrieved from the Japanese and help to with you know, spy type stuff. So I'm interested in that. So all of that's going in there. It's just not to a point right now where I can kind of tell you, oh, this is the next book and this is the next release, because I don't know yet.
It's kind of. That's exciting, though. It sounds like it'll be an interesting series. And I know the World War II era is very popular right now, too. There's a lot of readers that are really enjoying reading about that.
So. Yeah, I like it, too. And I just hope it's, by the time I get all this pulled together, I hope it's not like everybody's tired of it, which could happen. And I've done that.
You never know.
Well, I wrote a Civil War set book. And pitched it, and it was the market was glutted at the time. So I pulled that book back in, and then four or five years later, I sold it and with no trouble. So, you know, these things just kind of go in cycles.
Yep. Yep.
So how can our listeners connect with you?
I do have an Instagram, and it's Author Beth White at Instagram. And then I have a Facebook author page as well as my personal page, so people can do that. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not a Twitter fan, so
yeah.
I mean, I had a Twitter account at one time, but I kind of left that one. So yeah, and I do have a website. Sorry, I should say that, bethwhite.net, I need to go in and update it a little bit more. There's not been a whole lot of activity on it lately because of the position I'm in, but people still contact me through the website and I answer questions. So there you go.
Fun. Well, thank you so much. We really enjoyed connecting with you and just getting to know a little bit more about you and your books. So thanks for chatting today.
Yes,
thank you. I've enjoyed it so much. I'm looking forward to listening to your discussion when you get around to doing that too.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.